listening to Spooky Show with your host, Kate.
Do you know where that's from?
No.
Scary Movie 3.
Oh.
I used to know that whole rap for some reason. It is the best, one. It is the best one. Did we watch that?
No.
That's Final Destination.
That's one with Michael. No, Scary Movie's one with Michael Jackson.
It is the best one, too, though.
But, like, one of the main jokes in that is, like, it's Signs, and then Michael Jackson is in the room.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we love Scary Movie 3.
We do. We're recording.
Oh. Did you get my rap?
I did.
I'm cutting it. I'm not putting a rap.
Yeah, paywall.
Okay, yeah. So I rapped at the beginning of this episode. If you want to hear it,
you can Venmo me.
Venmo me. Okay, welcome to Spooky Show. Spooky Show in the history of the universe ever in life. It's your host, Kate. And.
Hello.
Sin is here too. And so is Johnny in the background. He likes to listen to the story sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes get very scared.
Yeah.
I'm back. This week, I don't believe anything that's coming out your mouth after what happened to me last time. You made a damn fool of me.
I think I made a fool of the audience, too. That was the point.
Fine.
Well, this is a requested story.
What do you sickos want?
Yeah, someone...
What all you fucking sickos out there?
Every time it's a requested story, Harrison's like, oh, God, it's going to be brutal.
Absolute sickos want to hear about?
I can't... I don't remember who requested it because I don't have my phone on me right now, but I'll tag them in the Instagram post. So thanks for this request. This story is pretty crazy.
Okay.
Lots of twists and turns.
We love twists and we love turns.
Okay. Also, this story takes place in South Africa, so I can't pronounce things.
That's what I was
going to
say. In District 9.
Okay. We begin our story with Annie, who was 28 at the time, born on March 12th, 1982.
Hair as red as
queen.
A strawberry.
She was
born an orphan in the Great Depressions.
She was born as Annie Hindosha to Vinod and Neelam Hindosha in Sweden. And the Hindosha family was originally settled in Uganda, but they were forced to leave in the early 1970s because the country's president expelled...
He told them, Uganda go.
He expelled... It's actually much darker than that. The president actually expelled all Asians living there, so that's really fucked up, Harrison.
Absolutely.
You're canceled for that one. Anything you want to say?
I reject my cancellation.
Okay. Oh, okay.
And I retract my previous statement. And in the past moment, I've learned and grown.
Okay, well, Annie and her family were of Indian descent, so they were forced to leave. So they were granted residence.
That's very fucked up.
Yeah, they were granted residence in Sweden in Mariestad, and they settled there where Annie was born. Annie had two older siblings, a sister named Amy and a brother named Anish. And
all A names, love that.
Yeah, that's great. After moving to Sweden, the family did really well. Vinod, Annie's dad, ended up starting a very successful business. Mm-hmm. They were doing good in Sweden. We love Sweden, my homeland.
Yeah.
And Annie growing up was described as talented, ambitious, and confident. And his dad himself admits that he probably spoiled her too much, but he like couldn't help himself.
Of course, they had a traumatic young childhood.
Yeah. Annie's other family members, cousins and whatnot, said she was basically like the leader of the pack and the glue of the family. And her sister Amy had two kids, and Annie like loved them a ton and eventually wanted kids of her own one day and was looking to settle down eventually, you know?
Hey, but as we know, these stories around here, they tend to take a little bit of a
turn.
They
tend to take a turn. So she graduated from university with a degree in engineering and then moved to Stockholm to get a job in marketing for Ericsson, which is a phone company. So often she would go to London on the weekends for short trips because she liked to shop there. And eventually she started making friends there. So she would go often to see them, which is so cool. You just go to London.
I love shopping.
Like I feel like shopping in London this weekend. Like is that what living in Europe is like?
That's what it's like to be motherfucking Sharpay in High School Musical.
You're right. So then on one trip to London in 2009, she met a man named Shireen Dhawani, who was 30 years old and from Bristol. He was also from Indian descent, and his mother was also from Uganda and had to move to the UK for the same reasons that Annie's parents did. So there's a little bit of a connection there. His father came from Kenya to the UK and was very successful. He launched a chain of nursing homes, and Shireen helped his father run the family's business. So in turn, he was very successful. Like, he was already a millionaire before the age of 30. And he was very well respected by everyone in the field and his family. And so one of Annie's aunts actually introduced Annie and Shireen and set them up to go on a date at a coffee shop.
That's nice.
And actually, they did not hit it off on the first date.
Huh.
Annie wasn't really that interested. She was like, I'm not feeling this.
When she lives quite a jet-setter's little life.
Yeah. Maybe she wasn't ready to settle down. But she decided to give him another chance. And for the and then after the second date, she was like, okay, maybe I do like him. So now Shireen had been engaged before meeting Annie, but apparently the wedding was called off because of petty family disagreements.
Huh.
I do air quotes.
What could that be?
He was generally described as well-respected, but some other people did not agree with that. Some said he was arrogant and liked to show off his wealth. But, you know, on the other hand, a lot of people said he was really generous. And Annie told her sister that she liked him because she liked his sense of humor and how he made her feel protected.
Mm-hmm.
So now, obviously, Annie isn't living in the UK at the moment. She's still in Stockholm. So they had to maintain a long-distance relationship, which, of course, got tough. And friends said that they did argue a lot about the distance, and they were both very stubborn.
Uh-huh.
And once when Shireen was visiting Annie in Stockholm, he eventually met her family. And they all really liked him, and they were very happy for Annie. And apparently, Annie also told her father that Shireen didn't believe in sex before marriage. So her father was, like, approved, because he thought it showed, like, dedication to his religion and everything. But things were still rocky with the distance, and in January 2010, Annie actually called it off for a while. But it didn't last long, because literally a month later, they got back together, and Annie decided to quit her job and move to London to be with him. Her parents soon flew over as well to meet his family, and they described the Dhawani family as very welcoming and warm, but they were a little intimidated by their wealth at first, which is fair. But now that both of the parents approve of the couple, Annie and Shireen got engaged in May of 2010. 3 months before the wedding, Annie went to India to plan the wedding because they were going to get married in Mumbai. And they got married in October 2010, and it was a huge wedding and extremely lavish. It was 3 days long with hundreds of guests. Though the wedding did seem extravagant and, like, it was so perfect, some of Annie's friends do recall feeling a little bit weird about it. One of her friends said it didn't feel like Annie was very present. And another said it was a strange experience that didn't feel like the friend she knew. Do-do-do.
Emotional abuse.
So after their wedding, they flew back to Bristol to celebrate Diwali, and then after that, they went on their honeymoon. This honeymoon was a surprise to Annie. She had no idea where they were going, and Shireen organized it all, which I think is an important bit of information. But they left on November 7th and first landed in Kruger National Park in South Africa. They stayed there for a little bit, and then on November 12th, they went to Cape Town in South Africa. Apparently, Shireen chose South Africa because it was an S for Shireen and an A for Annie. Very well thought out.
Yeah, that one, that's cute, I guess.
Yeah. So now after they landed, instead of using the hotel's dedicated car service, Shireen decided to flag down a taxi because it was cheaper, even though he's rich.
We're going to Hillsboro, Kentucky when we get married.
Okay.
I was trying to think of HK places.
Hillsboro, Kentucky.
I think that's a real place.
Okay.
To the Google machine.
So he flags down this taxi driver. And no, it's kind of weird he's flagging down a taxi when the hotel has a dedicated car service and he's rich.
Correct.
He flags down a taxi driver named Zola Tongo.
Shout out to all of our listeners in Hillsboro. We love you.
Listeners in Hillsboro, Kentucky, if you're listening, and we know that you are, shout out. Okay. He flags down this taxi driver named Zola Tongo, and he pulled up in a Volkswagen minivan, and he drives them 20 minutes from the airport to their hotel called Cape Grace. So Zola pulls up to the hotel.
Spooky ass name.
You think?
Cape Grace?
Yeah, it's in Cape Town.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
This isn't called The Nice Show. This is called Spooky Show.
So everything I say, you're like, that's scary.
That's kind of scary.
Big Wedding Bad Sign at Nick and Priyanka. Anyway. So Zola.
SponCon wedding.
Zola pulls up to the hotel. Annie heads inside to unpack. And Sheeran spends an extra few minutes outside talking to Zola, the taxi driver, and asking if he could give them some more rides while they're in town. Sheeran said that they wanted to go to dinner the next night at 96 Winery Road, which was like nice, and asked Zola if he could drive them and show them around Cape Town afterwards. And Zola agreed. So after Zola left, Annie and Sheeran spent the rest of the night and day at the bar in the hotel and taking pictures. And then the next day, on November 13th, that morning, Zola comes to the hotel to pick up Sheeran and go into town to exchange some money because he needed to do the conversion shit with the money.
Yeah.
And then Zola brings Sheeran back to the hotel, and Sheeran and Annie spend the whole day at the hotel just relaxing. And then Zola came back to the hotel at 7:30 to pick them up for dinner.
Okay.
But on the way there, Sheeran and Annie decided that they didn't want to go to 96 Winery Road anymore. They were in the mood for something lighter and chiller. So Zola is like, oh, I know the perfect place. So just before 9 p.m., he drops them off at the Surfside restaurant in Strand. And they really didn't stay for that long. Zola literally picked them up at like 10:30 p.m. when they were done. And on their way home, Sheeran said that Annie was insistent that she wanted to see like the raw, real cultural parts of South Africa. Like, especially the nightlife of the townships. And she wanted to get out of like that 5-star hotel, touristy South Africa vibe. She wanted to like see the real thing. And Sheeran said that she insisted Zola drive around and show them what it was like. So Zola is like, okay, I know where to go. So he takes them to this township called Gugulethu. This town, however, is not safe. To this day, it has an extremely high crime rate. People that live there say it's rare that people ever leave their home after dark, let alone have tourists visit there. Over 700 people were murdered in Gugulethu between 2005 and 2010. 5 years, 700 people. Just to paint a picture. And Zola's like, oh, I know just the place. So at around 10:45 p.m., Zola stopped the car at an intersection and is waiting to turn. And out of nowhere, these two men with guns come up and rush the car and start banging on the windows, and eventually they force Zola out of the car. One of the gunmen gets in the driver's seat when Zola is out, and the other hijacker gets in the back seat with Sheeran and Annie, and they drive off. So they drive for about 20 minutes, and in this 20 minutes, they are telling Sheeran and Annie that they just want the car, that they're gonna let them go, but they're like, we'll let you go, but separately. So they also take Sheeran's watch and phone and all the expensive stuff, but they're like, we're not going to hurt you. We just want the car. So about an hour in, they stop the car and they throw Sheeran out into the road and they take off with Annie. Now, immediately after Zola was forced out of the car some time ago, he went straight to the Gugulethu police to report the hijacking. And Sheeran, when he was forced out of the car, he immediately went to he went and started knocking on doors of houses around the area where he was dropped off until finally someone opened his door and let him call the police. So the man who let Sheeran in tried to push him for details, but apparently Sheeran was hazy and couldn't remember a lot. So the police arrived shortly after and took Sheeran back to the location where the hijacking happened and tried to drive around and piece everything together and, of course, tried to find Annie. The police also located Zola because of his police call, picked him up, and they all went back to the Cape Grace Hotel. And when they got back to the hotel, Sheeran talked to the hotel manager, and the hotel manager commented how strange it was that this couple was staying at a 5-star hotel and felt compelled to drive through a town like Guguletu in the middle of the night. Like, what were you guys doing?
It seemed like trying to stage a kidnapping to try to get some ransom from the rich family. That's what it sounded like to me.
Okay. Maybe. So later, Annie's parents were notified that Annie was kidnapped. And they were notified from Sheeran's parents, not the police or Sheeran himself. Sheeran called them shortly after that, and even Annie's dad notes that it was odd because he kept saying, "I'm sorry, I could not protect your daughter." Because Annie's dad is thinking, well, she's not dead. Like, we'll get her back. We'll pay whatever we need to if this is a ransom thing. So Annie's dad...
Correct. Exactly why I thought.
Which, so it's weird that he's like, "I'm sorry, I couldn't take care of her." And Annie's dad's like, "Well, we can still get her. Like, everything will be okay." Like, he was being very calm. So Annie's dad booked the first flight from Sweden to Cape Town. And early the next morning, on November 14th, before Annie's dad even arrived in Cape Town, police received a call from a resident living in Kyalicha, which is about 15 minutes from Guguletu. And they said that a gray Volkswagen minivan had been sitting on the side of the road all night, and it's been a little weird. So police go and check it out at 8 a.m., and that is when they find the body of Annie Dewani laying across the back seat. She appeared to have been shot once at point-blank range in the neck, and the bullet had gone through her hand, grazed her shoulder, and then into her neck, and was lodged in the back seat.
Holy shit,
She had some bruises on her body as well, and the coroner later said that she likely just bled to death. She hadn't been sexually assaulted, but there were grip marks on her thighs as well, which indicates she might have been restrained, and there was obviously a struggle. All of her jewelry and expensive items were missing as well. So Annie's father actually heard this news right before boarding his connecting flight from Amsterdam, and he spent the entire flight just feeling, like, completely numb. Investigators are still working through the scene, and one of them said straight away that this would not be a straightforward case. Something felt very strange about it. Everyone thought that Zola would have known the area well enough to know the dangers there. And when police asked him about this, he just kept saying that Annie insisted they go there. But even Annie's sister said she didn't believe that Annie would really want to do that, and that she knew about, like, going out in the middle of the night and how that's super dangerous.
Right.
And it also doesn't make sense to officers why they let Zola and Sheeran go, knowing they would probably call the police and have seen their faces and then just shoot Annie. Like, why they let these two men go but shoot her, especially when this wasn't sexually motivated. So why did they tell Sheeran and Annie earlier that they just wanted the car also and then leave it on the side of the road with Annie's body in it? They kept saying, "We just want the car." So as you can guess, there was immediately a huge media frenzy around this case. So there was a lot of pressure on authorities to solve this case quickly. Also because the World Cup just took place in South Africa in 2010, and they were hoping that this would get them, like, tourism, but then this case just immediately blew up, and they were worried that that would affect tourism industry because it was making headlines instead of the World Cup. So the police really put in a lot of time and resources into this case. And originally, Zola was very cooperative with police and answered all questions. So this case was moving at a fast rate very quickly. The police found two suspects immediately. Police tested the minivan for prints, and that brought them to their first suspect, 25-year-old Colley Mangini. He had been arrested several years earlier, and his prints were still on file. He was apprehended at his home on November 16th, and while police were looking around, they found a phone that had been lodged between the mattress and the bed frame. And when police asked who it belonged to, he said it belonged to the taxi driver, Zola. So right away, Mangini confessed to everything.
Damn.
He was like, "Yes, I did this." He gave him the name of his accomplice, 27-year-old Mizawamboda Kwabe. And Mangini also said that Kwabe was the one who shot and killed Annie.
Were they paid?
And that's the end.
That's it?
No. But you, like, you think, like, oh, okay, they found him.
Were they paid?
Done and done. So by this time, too, Sheeran had already went back to the UK. He gone. He's out.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, okay. Uh-huh, yes, of course. This is quite unfolding and... Okay, uh-huh, please, come on.
So, Kwabe also had a criminal record.
Uh-huh.
Not a violent one, but 2 days later, on November 18th, Kwabe was also arrested and brought in for questioning. And again, he confessed to pretty much everything right away. And he also implicated a third accomplice, 33-year-old Monde Mimbulambo, who was a receptionist at another hotel. So, Monde is arrested as well. And as he is being brought in, he passes by Kwabe. And Kwabe asks if he could talk to Monde in English, supervised, just really quick. And so he walks up to Monde and says, tell them everything. So Monde tells police that the driver, Zola, had come to him asking for a hitman. So Monde put him in touch with the hijackers, Kwabe and Mangini. Now Zola gets arrested.
And then they're like, Zola, you gotta talk. Who paid the cab driver?
Yeah, right, right.
So I will say, all of Zola's friends said that Zola was incredibly responsible and law-abiding, and him playing a part in any way of this was just, like, really hard to believe. But Sheeran actually told reporters on November 27th that he thought Zola probably had something to do with it, and he wasn't shocked that he got arrested, too.
What?
So Zola entered a plea bargain for a lesser sentence for more information. So that's, he did just that. He said he wanted to tell the full story and the whole truth, and that this was no random attack.
Okay.
So he said that Annie's husband, Sheeran, that had orchestrated the entire crime and put together the entire plan to kill his new wife. He said that the day he picked up Sheeran and Annie from the airport, Sheeran stayed behind to talk to him for a while yep. Annie went inside.
I remember.
And according to CCTV footage, Sheeran spent almost 10 minutes talking to Zola in the car. Which is like, if you're just saying, hey, can you pick us up for dinner later? Why is that taking 10 minutes?
Wait, also, why would he want to kill her for money?
We'll see. So Sheeran, while he's in that car, while they're in the car that morning, Sheeran said to Zola that he wanted someone taken off the scene. And Zola was like, you're looking at the wrong man. But I do have a friend who knows someone who could do that for you. And his friend was Monde. So Zola said that Sheeran offered 15,000 rand, which is equivalent to 2,000 US dollars at the time, to carry out the alleged hit.
2,000 bucks?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Zola said that after he talked to Sheeran that day, he went...
Cheap motherfucker thinks his wife is, like, worth 2,000 bucks.
I mean, I'm sure he would have offered more, but that's what they took, you know?
Dumbass.
Yeah. So Zola said after he talked to Sheeran that day...
Unreal.
He went to the hotel that Monde worked at, and then they contacted Kwabe, and the plan was set in motion. Zola visiting Monde... at the hotel to tell him about this is also on CCTV, by the way. So phone records show Monde repeatedly trying to get a hold of Kwabe, and the CCTV at the hotel actually has audio, and you can hear Monde say, it's that thing we were talking about. It must happen today. The person that wants it is in a rush. So Zola says that the next morning he went to pick up Sheeran and take him into town to exchange some money. Like we mentioned earlier, but apparently he was actually doing this so he had cash to give the people who were going to kill his wife. There's no paper trail of this because he was exchanging cash for cash, but there is video footage of this, and Annie's dad also called while Sheeran was out doing this, and Sheeran had Annie's phone and answered and said he was getting money out. So after Sheeran gets money out, Zola takes him back to the hotel, and Zola goes to meet up with Kwabe, and in this meeting is when Kwabe introduces Zola to Mangini, and they both agree to do the hit. And they agreed that they will do it that night in Gugulethu. So that night, Zola goes to pick up Sheeran and Annie, and apparently outside of the restaurant, Sheeran takes Zola aside and asks if everything is ready to go, and Zola assures him that it is. So apparently during that ride to Gugulethu, Sheeran and Zola exchanged some text messages, and Sheeran said that the money was in an envelope and tucked behind the front seat. Police said that the texts between the two were corroborated by cell phone data analysis, but because Sheeran's phone was never found, we won't know what they said. Zola also said that the morning after the hijacking and before Annie's body was found, he actually met with Sheeran at the Cape Grace Hotel, and Sheeran was just asking if everything was done and if Annie had been killed. And this was also on CCTV. Everything that Zola is saying is backed up by CCTV footage. You can see Sheeran looking around for cameras because Zola points out that, you know, there might be some around at one point in the conversation. And you can also see Sheeran asking one of the cleaners in the hotel room to leave.
Well, these people work at the hotel. They don't even know where their own cameras are. This is like foolishness.
Well, Zola doesn't work at the hotel.
No, but the receptionist sure does. Right?
The receptionist works at a different hotel. Okay. And they're not. Oh, okay. He's out of the picture. He just set up. Like, Monde was just like, oh, here's Kwabe. He's a hitman.
So he has multiple different.
Yeah. Men. Yeah. He's kind of out of it now.
Okay. There's a lot of players in this.
I know. A couple days later, they met at the Cape Grace Hotel again to do the money exchange, apparently. And on CCTV, you can see Sheeran walking through the halls with a white envelope. And then later, you see him without one. And then you see Zola leaving with it.
That's wild. That is. It's just like all there, entire map on CCTV.
Yeah. So this is all pretty much all police found after they heard this news from Zola. And they also found out that Annie's final text to family was literally talking about how unhappy she was and how she thinks she might have made a mistake marrying Sheeran and that she hates him. Sheeran was also changing his statements to police after this. In his first statement, he said that he gave everything to the hijackers, his phone, jewelry, watches. And then a little while later, he ended up calling one of the police officers and asking if they could check one of the seams in the minivan because he put Annie's engagement ring in there. So the officers go to check the minivan, and yep, it was still there. So it's like, why are you just remembering this now? He had a few inconsistencies, like similar to this ring thing with the police. And while talking to Annie's family, he was getting like timelines wrong and locations wrong. So on December 7th, 2010, Zola enters his plea deal where he received 18 years in prison in exchange for his testimony against Sheeran. So this plea deal allowed South African police to issue a warrant for Sheeran's arrest. But by this point, like I said earlier, Sheeran was already back in the UK. So while all these confessions are coming out, Annie's funeral is being prepared and Sheeran just seems to have no interest whatsoever. Apparently, he threw a pizza party the night before the funeral. He was also, apparently, he was also so angry that Annie's family had gathered to say goodbye to Annie, and he threw the letters and flowers that they had left for her just on the ground.
What the fuck?
Yeah, apparently he was really violent with her body,
It seems like it.
Like, when it was being, like, prepared, he was trying to, like, force these bracelets on her and, like, or bangles on her, and was being, like, the family noted he was being really violent with it.
That's awful.
So after Zola's plea deal in December 2010, Sheeran was arrested in England on conspiring to murder Annie, but
God.
He was released shortly after on bail. And Sheeran's family then hired a PR agent named Max Clifford to deal with all the attention they were getting. And this man was a big deal PR agent who sucked. He was later arrested in 2014 for sexually assaulting young girls.
Hey,
but he's dead now.
Yikes.
He's dead now. So anyway, he was Max
Clifford. This is dark.
I know.
A bunch of dark characters at play. Once you get up to those upper echelons of wealth, you start to find some real fucking dark shit.
Yeah. So Max Clifford, he was trying to portray Sheeran as this grieving, loving husband. And then suddenly rumors started coming out that Sheeran was secretly gay.
What a tale.
So Sheeran and Max denied these rumors, but then this German sex worker who called himself the German Master came out and said that he had sex with Sheeran and told a bunch of stories about him. And apparently Sheeran was also active on a website called Gaydar. And this is a pretty big deal because at first everyone was like, Sheeran, you know, maybe he could have done this, but what was his motive? What would he be gaining from murdering Annie? There was no, like, life insurance policy or whatever.
Right.
So this could be why, like, especially in his culture, like, this could have something to do with it. So now, as far as other people involved in this crime, Kwabe was also offered a reduced sentence in exchange for a guilty plea and his promise of a testimony against Sheeran. He was then jailed for 25 years. Mangini was not offered any kind of deal because police were basically like, well, we have a deal from Zola. We have a deal from Kwabe. That's all we need.
Jeez.
So he would later plead not guilty in court. Mangini actually had to undergo brain surgery because of a tumor, so his trial got pushed back. But he was ultimately convicted and sentenced to life in prison. He died from his brain tumor later in prison. Monde admitted to his involvement, but he was granted full immunity from the prosecution in exchange for his promise of a truthful testimony against Sheeran. So he's free to go. In March 2011, there was an extradition hearing toward Sheeran, and the judge ruled that he should be extradited back to South Africa so that he can answer for the allegations against him. But Sheeran's lawyers appealed this because they said that he was suffering from depression and PTSD, and he was sent to the hospital under suicide watch because of all of the rumors that had come out about him and, you know, the murder of his wife. So they won that appeal, and he didn't have to be extradited until his condition was improved. Obviously, this whole thing was really hard on Annie's family because they felt like they couldn't start mourning until they got some kind of closure about this. They did end up scattering her ashes 6 months after her murder at Lake Verne, which was one of Annie's favorite places. The family really was not doing well after this. One of Annie's uncles said that though the family still gathered, there was no joy left anymore. Annie's sister and father went to a psychiatrist weekly, and Annie's mother just wasn't sleeping. And for a long, long time, Annie's family actually stayed behind Sheeran and were like, no, he couldn't have done this. But eventually, Annie's father said that he seemed to have way more questions than answers from Sheeran. So Sheeran's extradition hearings also went on for years, 4 years to be exact. He had another two scheduled, and those got pushed back for the same, like, mental health reasons. But in 2014, Sheeran was finally extradited to South Africa, and his trial began in October of that year, and he pled not guilty to all 5 charges against him. The prosecution argued that because he was secretly gay and his culture didn't believe in divorce, that he murdered Annie to get out of that marriage.
What?
They presented the evidence that he was gay via, you know, the dating websites he was on. They found he was watching porn on the honeymoon, and also just hours after Annie's body was discovered, he was watching porn. They also spoke about statements from the German master where Sheeran spoke to him and told him he was hiding a huge part of his life and his desire to get out of his marriage.
God damn.
They also presented evidence that Sheeran and Annie weren't happy. They presented the text messages where Annie told friends and family that she wasn't happy. They also spoke about how 3 weeks before their wedding, Annie had actually thrown her engagement ring at Sheeran and said, like, that's it, I'm not marrying you. And her family kind of, like, calmed her down. It was like, it's probably just stress. So that's why she did it anyway. She was literally sending these texts and everything on the honeymoon. So, like, it's pretty clear this was not a good time. The defense argued that Sheeran was actually bisexual and that that fact had nothing to do with the murder. They also argued that the CCTV footage...
actually, he's bisexual.
Yeah.
He's not a murderer. He's bisexual.
He's not a murderer. He's bisexual. Yeah, so they were like, but that has nothing to do with why, like, with the murder. They also argued that the CCTV footage of Sheeran walking with the white envelope and walking out without it, and then Zola walking out with the envelope, was actually just Sheeran paying Zola for his driving services while in Cape Town. They also mentioned the fact that Sheeran literally asked the first person he met in Cape Town if he knew anyone who could murder his wife, which is just, like, a really weird thing to do, like, really bold and bizarre. And I admit that myself. Like, what are the chances the first guy he talked to, Zola, like, actually did know someone and didn't immediately go to police and say, like, hey, this guy just picked up, wants to kill his wife.
That's what I'm saying. I'm like, this is 100% was a setup from the start.
Like, even from, like, going to South Africa.
Yeah, and that's why he went there for the initials thing, so that he could, like, have plausible deniability to the, like, most possible.
Because it is, like, that is a good, like, defense, honestly. Like, why would he just flag down the first person he sees and says, like, I want to murder my wife, you know someone? So they also argued that when Zola picked Sheeran and Annie up, he noticed expensive suitcases, handbags, and jewelry, and watches, and basically... They're trying to argue, like, after he dropped them off, he probably called up his friends and said he noticed these stores with a lot of money and that they should rob them. So, you know, making it seem like Sharon had nothing to do with what happened at all, that it was all Zola, like, orchestrating a robbery. The defense also said that they had found a few holes in Zola's story, where Zola was at first very confident on the stand. When it came time for the defense's cross-examination, his version of events started to change. His story was showing more and more contradictions. At one point, he claimed that the police must have been adding things to his statement without his knowledge, and that's why he was getting confused. Zola, Monde, and Kwabe were then all found to have committed perjury when their testimony showed differing versions, and they admitted to not telling the truth in parts of their affidavits. So, you know, also, we are now 4 years after the murder happening. It's been a long time that these people kind of have to remember back, so I can imagine why details aren't exactly the same. But everything was kind of starting to crumble at this trial. So on the 23rd day of Sharon's trial, his lawyers requested that the judge throw out the case on the basis that they deemed it to be massively flawed. This was all before Sharon had even taken the stand himself. So this case got dismissed, which is absolutely insane. He didn't even get on the stand. Like, and they said, sure, throw
it out.
That's
crazy.
Yeah. The judge on the case, Justice Janet Travoso, I think that's how you say it, said that Zola was the only one that could link Sharon to the crime, and his evidence contained a bunch of mistakes and lies, so he wasn't a credible witness. And she said that none of the other men were credible witnesses at all either. She said that they were all intelligent enough men to come up with the story against Sharon, and that the prosecution really held no weight, so Sharon was free to go.
Fucked.
Annie's family was devastated at this news, obviously, and they felt they had been let down by the justice system and that Annie had been let down by the justice system. After Sharon's exoneration, Annie's family actually asked for the coroner's court in the UK to reopen the inquest into her death, which would compel Sharon to publicly answer questions. But coroner Andrew Walker said that there was insufficient cause to open an inquest, and he was prohibited from reaching a conclusion that was different to the South African court's findings.
Huh.
Yeah. So a formal complaint was also made against about like Judge Traverso under allegations of bias, which many with many people feeling that Sharon should have been made to take the stand and give evidence before, you know, calling it quits. But she later was cleared of these charges. As of 2018, Sharon was living in the UK with his boyfriend. And that's it. He's living his best life right now with his boyfriend. Yeah, he's totally fine. But also, like, did he orchestrate it?
Yes.
You really think so? You don't think that maybe it was just some, like, maybe Zola really did just see all this stuff and went to Monde and was like, yo, I just saw, like, this rich couple. I just drove them to the hotel. Like, we should rob them. Get your friends. Like, maybe that's what happened.
But for it to be so specific where he was spared in the carjacking, there was no ransom asked for. Exactly. He's rich enough that he's above the law.
I know.
And these people are very rich and obviously have a fantastic grasp on the legal system and how.
Yeah, he had like really good lawyers, of course. But I definitely think it was him who orchestrated
allegedly.
It.
Okay,
but also, like, why?
Allegedly.
Allegedly, him who orchestrated
still
it.
Still a person alive.
I know. But
I
like,
can still sue you.
I know. I allegedly it was him.
And everything is, of course, allegedly, and also in parody.
But you gotta wonder, because it also doesn't really make sense to me why he would get married in the first place and then just like immediately kill his wife. Why get married at all if you're struggling to figure out your sexuality like in that big of a way? It's not like you were married for years and you were like, I can't take this anymore.
I know. That's why it's so weird.
It is weird.
And maybe not. And maybe not. And peace and love, if you're listening to this, the person who's involved in this story, please, you know, peace and love to you. You had your day in court, I guess-ish.
But I don't know. Every time I think, I'm like, yeah, this is what definitely happened. I just, like, second-guess myself. But also the CCTV footage, like, everything Zola was saying, like, totally matches up. Like, it's 100% true. Yeah. Anyway, let me know what you think about that one and what you
very
think.
Very good, very nice.
What you think, who you think was responsible. DM me on Instagram at SpookyShowPod. Are you scared again?
I'm scared again.
Okay. Yeah, add SpookyShowPod and rate and review the show. Of course, on Apple Podcasts. You can also rate on Spotify. Fun fact.
Sure can.
Yeah. Harrison, anything you want to say?
No.
All right. Thank you for listening. Thanks, Johnny. I'm glad you're here. He doesn't have a mic, so he's just in the background.
A microphone.
Yeah. Thanks for listening. Have the best week of your entire life. Bye.
Bye.